Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back, everybody. We continue hour number two here on KMOX, and it's at your service. I'm Mike Claiborne. We're going to have a chance to visit with Judge Jimmy Edwards. He was recently appointed as the Public Safety Director for the City of St. Louis. First of all, Judge, congratulations and welcome back to KMOX.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's certainly my pleasure. I'm excited, very excited to serve the city of St. Louis in a different capacity.
Well, let's talk a little bit about it, because you've sat on the bench for a number of years, and your contributions to the community and working with youth and providing better education and opportunities has been well documented. What was the reason and what was the thought process in deciding that this was the opportunity that you wanted to take on?
Michael, I've seen a fractured community, more fractured than I've ever seen before. Over the last 25 years as a trial judge, I've seen the worst in our city, and I've certainly seen the best. I thought that this was just simply a great opportunity. After having talked to Mayor Lyda Crewson, having been offered the position, the only question that I had was whether I could help. Could I help restore confidence and trust of the African-American community and other marginalized sections of our city back in the court system, and more importantly, back in our police department? And the answer was yes. I just believe that because of the relationships that I have over the last 25 years with police, and because of the relationships that I've had with the public, I thought that perhaps I would be the ideal person to bring everybody away from the fringes to the center and have a conversation that hopefully would restore that trust gap.
Let me go back to one thing. We use the title Director of Public Safety. That's a large, all-encompassing title that includes a variety of things, not just monitoring the police department and the fire department. There are a lot of things that now fall under that title.
Yes. Yes, it is the largest department in the city of St. Louis. It has the most employees, and it has the largest budget. It is an awesome task, and you have to trust people. I have to be able to trust that the people will do their jobs even when no one's looking. I have to trust that they will always do their very best to serve the citizens of St. Louis, as well as people that visit our city, people that play in our city.
You know, with that said, you mentioned trust. And I think also we've had a number of people call for a full-time public safety director. What about morale? Because I think that's another issue that comes into play. It's been somewhat apathetic. We're in between police chiefs. We've had a lot of issues go on within the city of St. Louis that have not made people proud of this community. What about morale, and what do you feel you can do on that front to kind of get people moving in the right direction and taking pride not only in their position that they currently hold, but certainly in the community that they serve?
Well, I think it's incumbent upon me as the director, the future director of public safety, to instill morale. It is my job to let all of those employees know that I listen to every single thing that they say. I am willing and ready to make changes in order to make it better, in order to make our services more efficient, and certainly I'm very much in favor of trying to make sure that they are paid a fair wage for the jobs that they do.
Yeah, that's interesting you bring up wages, because St. Louis has always competed around the country as far as wages, certainly for police and fire. How do you find a way to make these positions even more competitive, that, whereas you don't lose quality individuals because of money?
Well, I think first, it's incumbent upon every citizen to do his or her part to make sure that our first responders are paid adequately, whether it's a tax or whatever it is. I think that we all will have to make some sacrifices in order to keep good people working in the city of St. Louis. You know, it's you get what you pay for, and it's easy to get folk to come in here that won't do a good job, people that don't know a lot about our communities, and people that don't respect our communities. So if we want to have the good people, the people that are educated, the people that are willing to be fair, the people that understand what it means to be equitable, people that are culturally conscious, people that are willing to look at their own internal biases, those are the people that we want in our community. In order to get them here, in order to keep them here, then they need to be paid.
You sat on the bench for a number of years, and you were a very well-respected jurist. For you, and being able to apply your experience on the bench, what was the one common issue that you ran across from being a judge that you feel needs to be amended, certainly from a public safety standpoint, to get more people on the right page of what St. Louis should be all about?
Well, certainly I think that people that commit crime, there should be consequences. However, I think we need to take a look at sentencing. It needs to be reformed. In my mind, no one should go to prison because of their status, because they're hungry and because they're poor. Those things, or that thing alone, should not result in incarceration. If a person commits a crime, then there are consequences, and I certainly understand that. I think that my experience in terms of criminal justice is that we have to have people willing to come in and to be witnesses when they see something. Victims have to show up in the courthouse. And just as importantly, jurors, people have to be willing to do jury duty. If you don't do jury duty, then you're not participating fully in the criminal justice system. If you're unwilling to come down and spend a day or 2 days or 3 days doing jury duty, then there's nothing to really complain about. If you are a victim, you have to help the police. If you are a witness, we have to help each other. You see, in order for this to go well for me and for others, we all are participants in public safety, and that's important. It doesn't matter whether it's the building inspector. It doesn't matter whether it's the correction officer. We all have some responsibility in this thing we call public safety in the city of St. Louis.
We're visiting with Jimmy Edwards, and he is now the public safety director for the city of St. Louis. Judge, one of the things that really kind of makes me scratch my head, obviously, with the police department, it's a different job than what it used to be. And there's a lot of challenges that police officers are having to deal with. But one of the things that really concerns me, we have two separate unions, one representing predominantly white officers, one representing predominantly black officers. With race issues as they are, not only in this country, but let's just stay local, how do you try and bridge that situation, whereas we can get the blue to eliminate the black and the white?
Well, you are absolutely right. That's problematic for me, especially now that I am having an opportunity to look deeper inside of what's going on inside of the police department. It appears that we have two police departments. That doesn't sit well with me. We have one police department. We have men and women in that police department that I believe care about the exact same thing, and that is protect and serve. But we have a problem as people perceive our police department as well. And so we're going to have to correct that. I believe we all want the exact same thing. Unfortunately, we've been yelling far too long to even hear what the other side is saying. They've been yelling far too long to even hear each other inside of that exact same police department. We have to eradicate those problems. We have to get past all of the race issues as it relates to police officers and as it relates to our community in general. I know it's a problem. I'm not naive enough to say that it's not, but that's something that we have to fix.
Have you had a chance to meet with both unions yet and just express your concern and your opinion on where we're headed with this?
I have met with one union president, and I will be meeting with the other union president early next week.
Let's go back to the community. As I mentioned, you served on the bench for a number of years, so you know a lot of these people that have come in front of you.
Yes.
The only way I think this can be solved is a grassroots effort in being more community involved. And I think you said something earlier. People have to be willing to testify and have to be willing to be witnesses and appear in court. How do you go into communities where, as they say, you know, snitches get stitches? How do you go in and try and turn that around and provide them with the security of knowing that if they're going to go in and try and make their community more accountable by testifying, how do you get them to believe that this is going to work this time?
Well, first, I think we have to change the narrative. The narrative has to be that we all want peace in our community, and we all want to feel safe. And we only talk about snitches getting stitches when the victims are not our loved ones. If the victim was someone that we cared about and someone that we love, then we want everybody to come to court and testify. And so we behave in certain ways when it's comfortable. In a time of comfort, you can be all of the things that we find just abhorrent. But when it's you personally, when you are the victim, you want help. And so the analogy that I like to give is that if I need a surgery and the only surgeon that's available is a gay black man, I'm fine with that because that gay black man is going to save my life. But, you know, if I don't need a surgery and I don't need him, then perhaps I can engage in some discrimination. See, we are selective in terms of when we say things. We're selective in terms of when we believe folk need help. We're selective when we come to court. And so we're going to have to change the narrative. I mean, we're going to have to get past all of that. And if we can get past all of that, starting inside of our police department and then taking it outside of our police department and taking it into our community, then I think we will have a better community.
As we wind things up with Jimmy Edwards, Judge Jimmy Edwards, who is now the Director of Public Safety for the City of St. Louis, I know you probably have a list of priorities that you probably have already undertaken. What's first and foremost for you, and what's the one you feel like you can get through, whereas you can see an improvement, and obviously the citizens can see something's being done?
Well, certainly, while all of the other departments are very important to me, as the Director of Public Safety, we have to get a police chief. And we have to get a police chief in place that can earn the respect of not only the rank and file, but also the community. That's very, very important to me. And I hope that is done sooner than later.
All right, Jimmy. Thank you so much for your time. It's been a treat to have a chance to visit with you. More importantly, on behalf of everybody in St. Louis, best of luck, because this is a venture that certainly will point this city in the direction that we all want it to be for a number of years once you're successful with this. So we're pulling for you, and we wish you nothing but the best. And hopefully we'll have a chance to stay in touch and continue to talk and monitor how things are going.
Absolutely, Michael. I want absolute transparency, and I want accountability. Thank you very much.
That's Jimmy Edwards, the Director of Public Safety. I'm Mike Claiborne. Stand by, folks. We've got more coming your way here in just a bit. Welcome back, everybody. We continue here on KMOX. It's At Your Service. I'm Mike Claiborne, as we mentioned going into the break. That Fitbit that you're wearing, along with some of the other electronic items that you possess, could certainly turn things around for you when it comes to your whereabouts. And there was an interesting piece in the Chicago Tribune recently, and we're going to talk to a person who has been really on top of this, and it was quoted in the article, Brad Young. He's a partner with Harris, Dahl, Fisher, and Young, and it's always good to have him on KMOX. Brad, thank you for the time. As I mentioned, this Fitbit I'm wearing now, I'm a little concerned about it, and I guess I'm concerned about all the stuff that I have, including my cell phone.
And you should be. And hi, Mike. It's good to talk to you again. The Fitbit might be good for your waistline, but it may not be good for your privacy. And that's the bottom line. And obviously, privacy is a two-way street. Sometimes it helps us, sometimes it doesn't. But the article in the Chicago Tribune detailed a situation that happened in Connecticut a few years ago where a husband claimed that a burglar came in and killed his wife. And then when he gave the details to the police, the police obtained the Fitbit that the wife was wearing. It showed her movements. It completely contradicted everything the husband said, and now he's being charged with murder. So the point is that these devices that we have, they do great things, and we enjoy the benefits that we receive from them. But we need to understand that there's also the other side, which is it invades our privacy, tracks our movements. And I'm not saying we don't use those devices. What I'm suggesting is we just need to be aware of it.
Now, and this applies to law-abiding citizens. We're not talking about if you're thinking about committing a crime, but we're just talking about the privacy issue that has become more invasive now than ever before. So when you start to get the emails and the text messages, and now all of a sudden you're in another database with regard to your spending habits, it can all be attributed to what you're wearing and what you're carrying now, I would assume.
That's exactly right. And in fact, there's something that everybody needs to be aware of. It's called a maid. That's not something that
this isn't Hazel.
Your home.
Yeah, okay.
Right. This is not a person that comes and cleans your house. Maid stands for mobile advertising identification. So, for example, not a lot of people know about this, but there are certain ads that come up, that pop up on your cell phone, that track your location. The purpose of that is not nefarious. I mean, the purpose is to track your location. So if you're driving by a Wendy's, then you can have a Wendy's ad pop up and say, don't pass this Wendy's, pull in and we'll give you $2 off a cheeseburger. Okay? So the mobile advertising has an alleged or supposed beneficial purpose. But my point is that those devices track exactly where you are. There's been several articles that were circulating just this week in privacy magazines talking about that a person could spend as little as $1,000 to obtain a mobile advertising identification ad and track you. So if someone wanted to do something, you know, bad to you, they could track your cell phone and it would cost them as little as $1,000. So again, I'm not trying to scare people. The point is to be aware, to be informed, to be knowledgeable. These devices do amazing things, but we also need to understand that they may do some things that have unintended consequences.
So what can a person do to create more safeguards? And what are the legal ramifications to this as well? Because I'm sure now at this point, when you buy one of these things, whether it's a cell phone or a Fitbit or whatever the case may be, there's got to be a disclaimer there to understand that, you know, buyer beware, because there are some legal issues that they won't be responsible for.
That's true, but let me ask you this, Mike. Let me answer your question with a question, because they teach you that in law school. when you signed up for your Facebook account, did you read all of the terms and conditions, or did you just check okay?
Well, that's a good question. I went through maybe the first four paragraphs, and then I realized there wasn't a lawyer in the room to go along with me, but it was something I wanted, and so therefore I went along with it, but I see where you're going with it.
Nobody reads that stuff, okay? Everybody just clicks, okay, I read it. I've read it. I agree to those terms and conditions. Nobody reads them, okay? And so and the reason why those terms and conditions are 27 pages long is because the person writing them doesn't want you to read them. You know, hundreds of years ago, lawyers got paid by the word, and, you know, that tradition kind of hangs around. So it's written so you won't read it. And but in there is information that informs you that these things can track you, you could opt out. But really, the biggest thing is just to be aware of it. So, for example, with your cell phone, you could turn off on every smartphone. There's going to be a location of services selection under the settings of both an Android phone and an iPhone, which is what most people have. You can turn off the location of services. And you can actually make it where you can selectively turn it on and off, because sometimes it's beneficial. Like, for example, when my wife tells me I'm going the wrong way and I'm sure that I'm going the correct way, then I want to turn on my cell phone to prove to her that I'm smarter than her and that I'm going the right way. Unfortunately, it's usually the opposite.
Well, I thought you were going to go the route that John Candy used in Trains, Planes, and Automobiles. How does she know what direction I'm going?
Right. Well, because I go whatever direction she wants me to go.
Good move on your part.
But my point is that when you want to know where you're going, you got to have that location of services on. But you can turn that feature on and off. Also, there are certain apps that people have on their phones that track you. For example, if you're using a very popular messaging app right now, it's called WhatsApp. WhatsApp has a feature that lets you track all of your friends in real time. Well, you know, here's a news flash. If it can track your friends, it's tracking you too. So that could also be disabled with a turning off location of services. But on a Fitbit, even on a Fitbit, there's going to be in the settings, when you set that up, it's going to be allow you to either turn on the location of services or turn it off. If you don't mind having your location tracked at all times, leave it on. That's a decision we get to make as consumers. But my concern is that people don't understand what's happening, so they can't make a logical, rational decision if they don't understand what's happening.
We're visiting with Brad Young. He's a partner with the law firm Harris, Dahl, Fisher & Young. And we're talking about the electronic fingerprints that are now being left by people. And sometimes you know what you're doing, but a lot of times you don't. So, Brad, where do we go from here? Because obviously this is something that's going to continue to grow, where people can monitor just about everything you do. Where do we go from here?
And that's a great question. From a criminal law perspective, I can specifically tell you, there's a case that the Supreme Court has agreed to accept. It's called United States versus Carpenter. The United States Supreme Court's going to issue a decision on that, certainly by June. And it's a case where the police were tracking an individual using his cell phone footprints when he would go from tower to tower, and they didn't have any sort of a warrant to get that information. So the Supreme Court's going to be deciding whether or not the police can track a person's digital footprint without a warrant. So we're going to get guidance on that from the Supreme Court. But that's only from a criminal perspective. That's not from a civil or if the person tracking you is not affiliated with the government. That is really just going to be an open question, because as with all things technology, technology is light years ahead of the legal system. So at this point, our legal system isn't really designed or equipped to deal with these technologically emerging issues like mobile advertising identification or Fitbit location of services. So we're going to have to see as this progresses whether or not there's enough of an outcry that legislation gets written. Because as it stands right now, unless you're the police or the government, there's really no boundaries on what you can do or what you can track when it comes to our devices.
Well, Brad, it's a very interesting subject that I think we'll hear a lot more about here in the very near future. Thank you for shedding some light on it, and we look forward to talking to you down the road. Brad Young, partner with Harris, Dahl, Fisher & Young. Thank you for your time, sir.
My pleasure, Mike. Anytime.
All right. That's Brad Young. I'm Mike Claiborne. Stand by. Terry Allen Cuppers has a great book out about solitary, and it's not the card game. It comes your way next on KMOX. Welcome back, everybody. We continue with At Your Service here on KMOX. I'm Mike Claiborne. And, you know, you hear the term when you go to jail. When you go to jail, you hear lock them up and throw away the key. Well, you know, it's one of those situations while most people try and stay out of jail, believe it or not, there are a lot of people who are incarcerated. And while it may sound effective and easy, throwing people in solitary confinement and all that you would think would be solved, well, that's not necessarily the case. For over 40 years, maximum security institutes where reform was supposed to be in place, well, that necessarily hasn't worked out in that manner. And while you may not care because those people are incarcerated, it is becoming an issue. With us today is Terry Allen Cuppers, who has written a book entitled Solitary, The Inside Story of Supermax Isolation and How It Can Be Abolished. Terry, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
My pleasure.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the general public. When they hear about people being sent away for a long, long time, what really happens and what's the lasting impact in and out of jail?
Well, the United States incarcerates a higher proportion of the population than any country in the world. And on top of that, we put more people in solitary confinement. The prison population has grown by 7 to 10 times since the 1970s. And actually, the proportion of people in prison with serious mental illness has grown at the same time. In the 80s, authorities just lost control of the prisons. There was so much violence and discontrol, they didn't know what to do. So they started putting people in solitary confinement, thousands and thousands of people. Today we have maybe 100,000 prisoners in solitary confinement, which means being in their cell, mostly idle, almost 24 hours a day. It causes massive human damage. It doesn't do anything for the security problem. There's no research showing that it decreases violence or gang activity. Meanwhile, a whole generation of people in prison are just being damaged so greatly that when they get out, they can't hold a job, they can't be successful in the community.
Obviously, people on the outside, most people don't care about what goes on the inside, but should they?
Well, that's a big mistake. You're right. Lock them up and throw away the key is a terrible sensibility. Generally, what happens is when the public forgets about people who are locked up, terrible abuses happen because the whole procedure is secret and the public doesn't know anything about what's going on in prison. The actual truth is that people who are locked in prison, 93% of them are eventually going to be released. And what's really important is not how massively we can punish people, but rather whether what we do to people when they're locked up decreases or increases the likelihood they'll return to substances and crime when they get out. So really, the public is being foolhardy about this because the prisoners are going to be released. When they're damaged, they're more likely to return to drugs and crime, and their recidivism rate is going to climb. So actually, it harms public security to put people in solitary confinement.
You know, you touched on what solitary confinement could be all about, and obviously it doesn't help anybody. And while there are people who probably deserve to be in jail, there are others who have tried to turn their lives around. And it appears that there aren't enough safeguards, let alone opportunities for people to enhance and enrich their own lives where they can be a contributor to society once they're released.
That's right. Well, most people who go to prison go for a short time, 2 or 3 years to begin with. And they're mostly in their teens or early 20s. They've made mistakes. When you go into a prison, you find very ordinary people. They're not awful, mean, and callous. They're actually quite a variety of people in prison. And they will admit that they did some stupid things when they were younger. They did drugs, they did crimes, if they're guilty. A lot of people in prison are innocent. But if they're guilty, they admit they did something stupid. But now it's 20 years later. They're sitting in prison getting an education for themselves, by themselves, reading everything they can get a hold of. And it doesn't make sense to keep them in prison for an immensely long time. And also, when we torture them by putting them in solitary confinement, we destroy their capacity to cope. And so when they get out, they're going to be very damaged and they're going to cause trouble.
The privatization of prisons is big money. A lot of money is being made by private companies who now run prisons. Was that a good idea? Because it seemed like all they wanted to do was provide space to put these people who are supposed to be behind bars without any means of reform. Because if you don't have reform, then maybe they recycle themselves and find themselves back in the cell. And it sounds to me that in that case, they don't worry about the individual. They just worry about the cell being used, whereas they get paid per cell and per inmate. So was that a good idea?
Well, of course, I feel it is a very foolhardy idea. There's two sides to it. One is, yes, people make money off of keeping certain prisoners locked away forever. And that's the way that I've made sense of some of the irrational policies in criminal justice. For instance, we lock up people for minor drug offenses. That crowds the prisons so that no prisoners really get the services they need, the education, the training, and job skills they need to succeed at going straight. Why do we lock so many people up with substance abuse problems? The research shows that people who go to jail or prison for substance abuse will come out with the same level of substance abuse, whereas people with substance abuse problems who receive treatment in the community, if they complete a bona fide substance abuse recovery program, 80% will be clean and sober after 3 years. So it makes no sense to lock them up. Of course, somebody's making money or gaining power. Conservative politicians, you know, like to say that they're tough on crime and that wins them votes. But it's human lives that they're damaging. On the other hand, if we put the same public resources into programs in the community, housing, for instance, education for people who were not well handled by our usual education system, and specifically job training and job creation, first of all, it would cost much less money, but an awful lot more money would be made by having that many more productive citizens.
Is there true reform, or are we in a position where we just cast the inmates aside and hope they never get out or have a chance to move on?
Well, unfortunately, there's too much of that. Because of the brutality and the abuse in the prison, and especially the solitary confinement and the kind of violence that happens in solitary confinement, where the officers attack the prisoners, they call it a cell extraction. Yes, there's an awful lot of damage, and the money is not being well used. Meanwhile, it costs a lot of money to build these solitary confinement units. So it's really a foolhardy direction. The state of Colorado has gotten rid of long-term solitary confinement. There was an op-ed in the New York Times this week by Rick Ramish, the head of the Colorado Department of Corrections. They've entirely gotten rid of solitary confinement lasting more than 2 weeks. And that means that their rehab programs, their education programs, their mental health programs have to be buffed up to handle the prisoners and help them with the problems. And that's where we need to go. But I think what we need to do is build those resources in the community, not behind bars.
Final question for Terry Allen Coopers, who's written a very interesting book entitled Solitary, The Inside Story of Supermax Isolation and How We Can Abolish It. What steps can be taken to correct this? And who listens at this point? Because as I said at the outset, out of sight, out of mind in a lot of cases, and people who are in prison, most people on the outside feel like they deserve to be there and they want to have nothing to do with them. So who's going to listen and who's going to take the right steps?
That's right. And that's why I wrote the book, is to explain that the people we're talking about are human beings, many of them caring, many of them very intelligent, and we should not be throwing them away the way we are. The first most important thing that we need to do is sentencing reform. We need to massively downsize the prisons. At the moment, the prisons are so overcrowded. We have practically 2.5 million people behind bars in the United States. The staff cannot possibly help the people gain the skills they need to succeed with that kind of crowding. So we have to do massive sentencing reform. We have to attend to the public services that are deficient. For instance, public mental health services. Well over half the prisoners have a serious mental illness. They shouldn't be behind bars. They should be receiving treatment in the community. And treatment in the community would be a lot less expensive, not just to supply the treatment, but also in terms of the eventual long-term problems people get into with poorly treated mental illness. And that's what's happening now. We're spending a fortune on incarcerating people with mental illness. We should be spending a small fraction of that on quality treatment in the community, and then they would never be locked up. So those are a few steps. Diversion is very promising. That is, programs in the community where a judge who is adjudicating someone's criminal behavior can say, look, I can send you to prison, or you could voluntarily go and take part in a mental health treatment program or a substance abuse recovery program. And if you did that, I would let you off. And that's called diversion, alternatives to incarceration, and it's very, very successful so that people can straighten out their lives. Another first step that needs to happen is what's been going on in Colorado, and that is we need to do away with solitary confinement. The way I recommend that step for corrections officials is that the staff, both the custody staff, the officers, and the mental health staff, have to put their heads together. They have to collaborate on how to handle the few difficult prisoners they want to put in solitary. We should bar them from putting them in solitary, and that creates a situation where the staff has to come up with a creative management plan for the difficult prisoners. That would be much more constructive.
Terry, it's an interesting subject for sure, and I hope that people can move it in a different direction where people who don't have a voice will be heard, and hopefully we can change, hopefully, the next generation of people who find themselves
incarcerated. Absolutely, and the first step is for us to stop thinking of these as throwaway people. We put them in prison, we say, lock them up and throw away the key, and awful things happen there. We have to remember that they're human beings, too, and they're amenable to rehabilitation and could be productive citizens.
Terry, again, thank you for the time. Best of luck with the book. Once again, it's called Solitary, the Inside Story of Supermax Isolation and How We Can Abolish It. Thank you again, sir.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Terry Allen Coper is our guest, and, man, an interesting subject for sure. But, folks, we're out of time. We really appreciate you spending time with us today. We want to thank Mark Reardon, Carol Browner, also Nick Shelby, Judge Jimmy Edwards, Brad Young, and, of course, Terry Allen Coppers for listening and being part of our show today. We're out of time for today. Don't forget, we'll be back here in the very near future. I'm Mike Claiborne on behalf of everyone here, wishing you a great rest of the day and a great start to next week.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.